All right. Welcome to Shoot Me Straight. Dave Fields, Eddie Gallagher. Today we were supposed to have a guest. Didn't pan out, but...
Wah-wah.
Yeah. But we... one thing I love about Eddie is, as far as a co-host in this is, if he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. And so when we set goals, and our goal has been one a week that we release them, man, we're going to do it. And so, having someone that's super reliable like that, that no matter what, he's going to figure out a way to do it. It's been awesome.
I appreciate that, Dave. Thank you for the kind words. And I feel the exact same way about you. All right. I think we've done a great job since we started. Our goal was to put out one a week and we've done so. And just for the people listening out there, I know that seems pretty easy, just putting out one podcast a week, but with our travel schedules, Dave and I have different, you know, businesses that we have to do, and that takes precedence sometimes. So we have done pat ourselves in the back, a great job of actually doing what we said. You know, and there's some weeks where we've had to do like three podcasts in a week just to keep that going, which that's the work you have to do.
Yeah.
And to follow through with your commitment. So, yeah. You know, that's both of us, Dave. We've both been putting a lot of hard work. Yeah. I'm proud of it. You know, now we're going into 2024, our second year. So
I know.
It's cool. Yeah.
It's awesome, man. We love doing this. We were thinking about today, talking some before the podcast, of just like our past aligning with my background. A lot was in, you know, I've been in recovery from drug and alcohol addiction for 23 years now, and was in the industry and was helping, was a counselor running halfway houses and dealing with all the craziness of helping people off drugs. And then with Eddie's background, being a vet and multiple years deployment, you had 10 deployments,
nine. Yep.
And the workups and all that stuff. But we're talking about how they kind of align when vets coming back home and the struggles they have. One of the big ones being drug addiction. And it's similar. You'd say the way you described it to me was almost, it's similar to like war. You said, you know, during those first like firefights or whatever, you get this high. And then afterwards, that dump.
Yeah.
And, I mean, similar with drugs, it's like you get that high. And kind of the first ones, you know, you're chasing that high again. And those first ones, it's like, man, you're trying to reach that level again, never quite being able to reach that level, but still chasing it.
Yeah, you're an addict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've never thought about it that way, that we're – and I like how you said – you also said, hey, just your experience isn't everyone's experience.
No, everybody's different. You know, I think what I don't like hearing, you know, when I hear other vets go on and talk about their experiences or what they've been through, but they sort of talk about it on this Blake, like this is what all veterans go through. And to me, I'm like that is a disservice to every other veteran because we're all different. We're not the same. I feel like the veteran community, you know, the word veteran, it's like, well, you're a veteran just like this person or this person. It's like, no, we're all our own human beings. We all have our own individual characteristics, mm-hmm. our individual traits. But there is some similarities in some of us, right? So when I was talking to you about, you know, going to combat for the first time and getting in that first firefight, each person reacts differently, but there is a group of us that I think all had a very similar trait where we liked it. It was the adrenaline rush of the gunfight, actually the happiness of getting to do what you've been training for, right? It's, you know, you've been doing all these, you know, practices, like if you were on a football team, but you never got to go actually play a football game.
Yeah.
This is like our football game. Like we trained our asses off to do this, and now we're doing it for real.
Yeah.
I think there's that involved, that level of accomplishment You know, it's like, yes, I'm at the game, and now I get to play the game, and we're winning. But there's also, you know, just that feeling of being close to death, mm-hmm. I think, is a big rush as well, knowing that your life could end at any moment during a firefight or just during a intense deployment.
Yeah.
There is that high that you get from that, and it's not everybody. I will talk about my own experience. Is yes, the first time I was in a gunfight, the first time I got to shoot a bad guy, I loved it. I like got a huge rush from it. And you want to sort of keep that going. That's the addict in me. Yeah. You know, I grew up doing drugs when I was in high school. I have a very addictive personality. Once I find something that I like that makes me feel a certain way, I want to keep that going. Mm-hmm. And it was no different when I joined the military and got to go to war for the first time. It was like, this is the ultimate high, which without any drugs.
You know, when we were hunting a while back at mm-hmm. the ranch, me and Corey sat in a blind, and it's the coolest hunting experience I've had, because I don't really care as much about shooting a deer, I don't mind it, but just getting to hear him, I think I think I said like 10 words in like 3 hours, and he talked about everything from all the trial and all that stuff, and from his experience and what it was like for him, and
yeah.
he also talked a lot about war, and the word that he used, he was so interesting how he described it for him, was primal. He's like, there's something so primal about it. And he said, it's like a drug that he's like, you can't even replicate that. He's like, 'cause your life's on the line. And,
yeah.
And he goes, it's so simple.
You know? And that is, I think that's one of the biggest addictions to it. Just the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's when you're out there and you're on operations, obviously you're focused on what your job is during the operation. You want to do it to the best of your ability. But once a gunfight kicks off and everyone's doing what they're trained to do, it literally breaks down to the most simplest form. It's you kill them or they kill you. And there's everything else in life is, you know, all the things that life throws at you, or all the little worries that you have at life, your bills and all the stuff you got to worry about back when you're in the United States and have to be an adult, that's all gone. You don't have to worry about any of that. All you're literally worrying about is your own survival and your buddy's survival, right? Which I think makes it very appealing for a lot of us when we go to war. It's like, I want to go back. I want to get back to the simple life, which is send me back over to Iraq or Afghanistan, mm-hmm. where I know all I have to worry about is protecting my brother next to me and protecting myself and getting the job done and killing the enemy.
Yeah.
That it is a very simplistic life. And I know I've tried, you know, you try to explain that to people and they're like, oh my gosh, that sounds crazy. You know, like it has to be so, you know, complex when you're over there, and it really isn't. You know, there are complex problems that we have to solve while we're there, as far as doing operations and planning for them, but once you're on the ground and you're on the operation, it's pretty simple, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, doing that job is, you could train a monkey to go take a gun and be like, all right, let's go do this.
Yeah.
You know, and he could probably do half as good a job as any of us, because it is a very primal, primal job.
Yeah, you seen that YouTube video with the monkey they give that AK?
Yeah,
to?
Yeah.
And they all start diving.
Exactly. Well, there's he was handling that weapon better than some of the people I've seen. So,
yeah. Dude. So if like a private citizen never experienced minimal amount of knowledge even about the military, I'm speaking for myself, like when you talk about going to war, getting in a firefight and going, man, I want to go back and I want to, you know, I want to kill the enemy. Do you think some people translate that, oh, you just love killing. You just want to kill. You just want to, like, drive around and just kill people. There's no conception of what it's like to be trained as a SEAL, to train to kill the enemy.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not about killing. It's not about just killing people. It's about going and doing your job and getting in those and fighting evil.
Yeah. I mean, that is a factor in it for sure. And I think, and again, I'll only speak from my own experience because I don't want to, like, make it sound like I'm speaking for every other individual that has gone to war. Mm-hmm. But from mine, like, it starts out as you sign up for the right reasons. You sign up to fight for this country, mm-hmm. To protect this country, and to take evil off this earth, which is what we were sold when we went into Iraq. And that's, I think, for me, the first couple of deployments that I did, that is what I was going off of. Like, this is a righteous job.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll say that the rest of my time there, I had definitely had that, you know, what I'm doing is righteous. That's what I kept telling myself.
Yeah.
Much like a drug addict would tell themselves, like, oh, I'm just going to take this one last hit, right? That's, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what drug addicts might tell themselves, and maybe you can expound on it to sort of, like, cover up their addiction on why they keep doing these drugs. It's, you know, I think for me, and this is all hindsight and looking back on it. Yes, I would you tell myself and tell my family, like, I'm leaving you because this is a righteous thing, because I'm protecting this country. I'm protecting you from evil. Mm-hmm. And I also am protecting my buddies. I have to go because my buddies are going. And that is definitely a true statement. That will never go away. But I think using that blanket of, oh, what I'm doing is righteous, and was just an excuse after a while. I mean, after my fifth or sixth deployment, it's like, how much is enough? Mm-hmm. It was never enough. Mm-hmm. I would have kept going, and I would have kept using that same excuse to keep going over there. The only excuse that I find valid looking back now is, and I will still say why I kept wanting to go back over there, was because my teammates were going back over there, and I wanted, there's a little bit of that FOMO. And also, if something does happen to one of these guys and I'm not there, then it's going to be my fault, which is a ridiculous statement. You know, looking back, like, war's war, shit happens. You know, you can't control everything, but you do have that mindset of, like, if I'm not there and something happens, it's going to be my fault. So I want to keep deploying and going back with them.
Is that bred in, dude? Like, I mean, is that kind of...
Yeah, that is definitely bred in.
I mean, you talk more about, to me, probably, like, you talk more about other SEALs than your own stuff. Like, you think more about them in a sense than even your own.
Yeah, because I love them.
Yeah.
I loved each individual that I went over there with, and I love them in a manner that some of them I did not maybe get along with, or they had a different personality than me, or we just had different views. But it doesn't matter, because once you're over there, you're on the same team. And you're trying to accomplish the same task. And so you have to have a love for them. Like, you know, I would have taken, you know, I'll take a bullet for them. Mm-hmm. And because I know they would do the same for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when I was a new guy, we were doing some training. We were picking up brass at the end of training, which is picking up the rounds we had just spent. And there was a guy in my platoon that was also a new guy, and he wasn't doing very well. He just wasn't performing, didn't have a great attitude. And, one of the older guys, as we were picking up brass, he's like, oh, you know, he talked about this individual. He's like, you know, what do you think about him? You know, that he's, you're going to have to be with him on deployment, and this is how bad he is. And I looked, I just, my only response was like, I'll take a bullet for him. Mm-hmm. And he sort of gave me like a cockeyed like look, like, what? And I'm like, it's not up to me whether, you know, if he's performing or not performing, he's still going over there with us. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's my responsibility to make sure he comes home, and I will take a bullet for him. Mm-hmm. That is the kind of love that you have for the guys that you have. Now, there are tighter relationships within a platoon. Like, I had buddies within the platoon that I truly loved as brothers. Like, they were my family. But then there's also dudes that they weren't that close to me, but I still had that love for them, that I would die for them. And I expected the same in return. Did that happen? No, not all the time, but it doesn't matter. Like, you can't think like that. Mm-hmm. If you start letting your little personality conflicts get in the middle, and you're making decisions off your own ego or just because you don't like an individual's views, well, then you're screwed. Mm-hmm. Like, then that is how toxicity can ruin a fighting unit. You all have to have that same belief. And that's just the way I looked at it, you know. And like I said, did it pan out that way sometimes? No. Yeah. But I wouldn't change my view on that ever. We went off on a tangent there.
No, that makes sense. Well, and after it really kind of leads to the second. After you get back and after you retire, like, your marriage is, you mentioned something really interesting. You're like, a lot of guys that I know, their marriages fell apart after they got back home.
Yeah, they
made it through all those deployments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that since I got out, and just you see these married couples, they made it through the 20 years or however many years, and then the husband gets out, mm-hmm. and then their marriage falls apart. And, you know, I can't, we didn't have that in my household, because my wife is just my hero, and she's just a freaking strong, savage wife that it will never gives up. And we went through our turmoils, you know, we went through our struggles when I got out. But I do think it's a big task to take on for these wives. And the way I'll describe it is, you know, and I know a lot of my friends' wives feel this way, because I know Andrea felt this way. While you're in, these wives are struggling while you are deploying just to keep the household going, just to keep the marriage going. And I know they tell themselves, like, okay, they're serving just like you are. They're serving that same enlistment. And they're like, okay, once he gets out, things are going to be back to normal. Things will get back to the way a marriage should be. And that could be, you know, for some, maybe it does work out. But I think for a lot, it's the farthest thing from the truth, right? And I think that's what causes these marriages to sort of end up in shambles a lot of the time, is because the wife has this expectation, like, once he's done with his service, everything's going to be on easy street. When the reality is, you haven't even faced the biggest struggle yet. These guys, you know, myself included, you get out, and that's where the real struggle happens. Now you're home all the time. You're possibly looking for another job, or maybe you got another job, but it doesn't serve the same purpose as you had when you're in. So you lose that sense of purpose, that sense of drive, and you're struggling, and then yet you have this wife who is expecting to, you know, you're out now, everything's good, mm-hmm. and you are a fucking mess. And now the wife now has to struggle again to help put you back together, or to get you back on your feet again mentally, or she has to at least be there with you, supporting you. And I think that's a big ask sometimes, especially if the marriage wasn't as stable to begin with, mm-hmm. right? So I think that is a big, big factor on why a lot of these marriages fall apart. And then also on the service member side, you know, if, especially if he spent the, his whole career going to war or, you know, deploying all the time, he's going to have all sorts of issues. And maybe his issues are with communication. Maybe his issues are with empathy. Maybe his issues are with being able to love, you know, because of the things that he's done or seen. But then you also add on drug addiction, right? Now, a lot of these guys are on like multiple different prescriptions because while you're in, you're taking whatever you can just to keep going, right? To keep operating. And the military will give you whatever you need to keep operating as far as on the pharmaceutical side. So you have these guys that get out and they have these addictions to these pharmaceuticals, which that, Dave, you know, I mean, you have more experience than I do in that manner. That is not an easy task either to get those people back off those prescriptions and get back to normal, right? So you have this huge cloud of just shit that you have to deal with, and the poor wife is like, oh, shit, I thought we were going to be good, and now we're back on, you know, struggle street, and it takes...
And the guy probably can't, the military member, I say guy, I mean, man or woman, but may not be the best at, they don't know what's going on with them necessarily.
No, they don't. I didn't know what was going on with me. I could not...
you communicate it?
Exactly, and it is, and I'm saying that from my own experience, like, I literally could not pinpoint what was wrong with me. I just knew that I was angry. I just knew that I would go into depressions. I literally felt like I was going crazy at times, but you can't, I couldn't pinpoint why. Like, why am I feeling this way? And so, yes, it's very hard to communicate with your spouse, like, hey, I'm feeling this way because, right? Which is what, you know, you go to therapy, they start off those, like, those sentences. Well,
I feel when you, I need.
Yes, which I nothing wrong with that, right? I think those are good ways to communicate with each other, but that's only if you, the person can verbally communicate what the hell is going on with them. Where with me, I'd be like, I feel this way because I have no fucking clue. I know I'm explosive. Just pissed, and now I'm pissed that you put me in this situation. Now I'm pissed that I'm at a therapist. Now, you know. It's a difficult, a road to travel, and, you have to have a very strong foundation as a married couple. You know, and we had God at the center, which I think was the big thing that pushed, like, got us through everything. But it take, and it's work on both parts, man. And I tell, you know, I've given some advice to a couple of my really good friends that are recently getting out, and you know, their wives are like family to us. Like, that we grew up together in the teams, and I just told them, I'm like, it's not easy. It's not going to be easy, because they're on the same thought. They're like, yeah, we're getting out soon. Every, you know, heck yeah, it's gonna be awesome. And I'm like, yes, have a good attitude. That's great. But I also tell them, I'm like, you should expect, like, there's gonna be some struggles, and I just tell them, I'm like, you both need to have patience with each other. You need to exercise patience more than you have before, because
it's probably really hard for the wife, honestly.
Yeah, because she's been exercising it for 20 years or however long, right?
So it's got to be like, it's got to be hard for the spouse not to get resentful. They're like, I've been doing this this whole time, and I've been handling bills and watching kids or whatever, and now you're telling me I'm going to have to double down again and more. And
and they,
it's,
you know,
probably hard for it. I guess for the military member getting out, for them to at least see that, so they can know, hey, this feels really unfair to them.
It is unfair. You know, it's be truthful. Yeah, it is unfair. And they have every right to be resentful, right? Like, not that they should be resentful, but yeah, I mean, if they've been a warrior wife that has held down the home front, that has supported you the whole time while you've been deploying, while you've been gone, And then you get out and all of a sudden you're jacked up and they have to now support you through your freaking jacked upness that who knows how long that's going to go for. Yeah, it's unfair. But at the end of the day, we all know life's not fair. It's just not. And
I think what's helpful, what could be helpful for them, right? Because you got to see, the possibility of like what it could be. Like I think of you and Andrew as being really good examples of that. Like one thing I think with you guys, one really strong, right? Being able to weather the storm,
mm-hmm.
especially coming out, but also that love for each other. Like I think when I think of y'all's family, I think probably the first word that comes to mind is love. Honestly, like the love y'all have for each other, the
love and respect. Yeah.
Respect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, also what's great with Andrea is she has her own life in a sense. Like
she's independent.
Yeah. That's helpful to not look into you, be like, okay, if you're not okay, then I can't be, and all the whole world. It's like,
no, she's, if I'm not okay, she's like, all right, well, I'm gonna go on about my life. And you know, I mean,
which
not,
that's
it's
healthy,
not, it is a healthy, it's not she's doing it to like be mean or like, she's just like, listen, you need to work on yourself. I am not going to slow my life down or, you know, or come down to your level, yeah. just to make you feel better,
yeah.
which I'm so glad that she didn't.
Yeah.
She pushed me all the time to make myself better.
Yeah.
And I think that, and you know, it doesn't have to be trans. I think it's just in a marriage in general. Mm-hmm. Like that's how both people should be. It's like they should be expecting the best out of each other. And if you're not seeing the best out of that person, then you should push them to be better. Mm-hmm. Are there ways of doing that could be toxic? Yes, but there's also ways to do it that can make your marriage better. And it's yeah. a work on both parts. Like for me, when I got out, I could see the damage I was doing, not just to her, but to my kid, like as a family as a whole, just by not working on myself, by being in this bitter, depressed state. And you, as a man, you're like, okay, I have to work on myself and nobody can do it for me. My family's not going to do it for me. Mm-hmm. I have to do it. And it's a fight. And it's a fight to get to that place where now you are somebody that your family not only wants to be around, but can look up to and that expects you to lead,
yeah.
right? And you can start leading again. You can't lead your family if you haven't fixed yourself.
Yeah.
So, but that takes a lot of work.
It does, but I think if people can, if someone's getting out of service or specifically if they're getting out of service and looking at this, if they can see that, hey, in X amount of time or in after doing a lot of this work, it's going to get better and better
yes.
and better. Like I would say, correct me if I'm wrong, you're probably in the best place you've ever, like your whole family and everything in your whole life.
Yeah, like, oh, for sure.
You know, and I think that is like, you're like, wait, I could be in a better place than I was when I was on the teams and doing this. And it's like, yeah, everything's in alignment. Like, we just had Ava on. Like,
yeah.
Ava's like this shining young woman. She's become, you know, it's like, how more rewarding could that be for a father than seeing those things? Like, those fruits.
That's the ultimate reward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think if they can see some of that, have examples like that, problem is there's, from what I hear, there's not a lot of examples like that. So it's like more couples that have made it through, or maybe it just takes some time to find those examples.
Yeah. There are plenty of examples like that. You know, I'll say like my friend group that I had in the teams, which revolves around mainly my first two platoons. We have stayed super tight ever since then. You know, we all went our different ways in the SEAL teams, but every person, and this is, it's a crazy statistic. I mean, obviously the divorce rate in the SEAL teams is 120%. And the reason it's 120 is because they count second divorces. But that friend group I've had, they're all still married to the same woman. And this has been over 20 years. And they're all retiring with the same woman, you know. And I think that speaks volumes to the people that you surround yourself with, too, while you're in. And also when you get out, right? You don't want to be around toxic people or toxic relationships because that can bring you down. Andrew and I have had to sort of distance ourselves from some that were like, this isn't doing good for our marriage. Even though I love this individual, I cannot have this affect my family. And you know, but fortunately with that friend group that I've had, we've all been pretty successful with our marriages, and our career, which is a hard thing to do. But yeah, it's a difficult journey, and that's why I say patience is the key, man. If you really love that individual, and to me, I'm like, dude, you just spent 20 years going through probably some of the hardest times, and to let it all go now is crazy to me. But at the same time, I do know that some people should get divorced. Like, if it's that bad, and then it's like, okay, call it quits. Like, you guys aren't gonna mesh together. And I mean, thank God I've never been in that predicament, but I know that there are some individuals that I've talked to, like, dude, no, it's way better off that we got divorced, and it's better off for the kids. It's because it was just that bad and that toxic. But to me, I'm like, if you truly love that individual, then you will fight for it to the very end, and you will change yourself, you know.
It's worth it.
Yeah, oh yeah, so worth it.
But you think some guys get out and, you know, as they're, instead of, you know, putting in the work to figure out purpose, doing stuff like the Surf Brigade, stuff like that, to fix themselves and, and to grow, they, like, go into, like, okay, what's a quick way, like, vet influencer mode or, like, let me.
The veteran influencer route. I don't know if like a lot of people go that route. I think I've seen it more and more. Maybe that's just because of the Instagram feed that I get, and they're like, oh, you're a veteran, look at this, and it's a bunch of other veteran influencers out there. I think that is a route that you can take, depending on your experiences that you've had, and if you're able to use those experiences to help others and inspire them. I do think there is some good in that. But what I've also seen, which sort of makes me sick to my stomach, it does make me sick to my stomach and makes me not like want to be a part of a lot of it, is I think a lot of guys get out and they feel like they have to embellish their career a bit, or just straight up lie. I've seen a lot of that go on. And, to me, once you embellish a story or lie about a story or tell someone else's story as your own, anything that you do, you have done before that, and you could have done a lot of good, is just wiped out. Like, you are no longer a trustworthy person. You are doing this all for yourself, like me, look at me. And you're not, like, to me, that you're not inspiring at all, right? You might be inspiring people to do the wrong thing. And so I definitely have seen a lot of that. And it's a very, it's just a weird.
Because the public wouldn't necessarily know.
No, the public doesn't know.
Like, I couldn't tell you the difference between a SEAL that is lying and telling a bunch of different crazy stories to get a bunch of views and clicks and all that stuff to, like, one that is, it's all genuine. And, like, I wouldn't know the difference between any of them.
No, right? And neither would a lot of, I mean, and civilians, I wouldn't expect them to know the difference. Yeah. You know, if you have a guy coming out And yes, he is a SEAL, or he is a Green Beret, or he is, you know, named the Special Operations Branch. And they're telling these wild stories. Like, yeah, they're going to believe it. Well, why would these people lie? You know, it's, well, guess what? There's a lot of them out there that are lying. It's sad. It's unfortunate. And some of these individuals that are out there lying, they have a massive following. They have a cult following. That's the type of stuff that makes me sick to my stomach. And I don't, it's not my position to come out and call those people out by name either. I'm like, that's, they're going down that path. And they might be making tons of money doing so, you know, getting tons of whatever, endorsements, sponsorships, speaking engagements. To me, I'd rather keep my integrity and honor intact and not make a bunch of money. That's just the way I feel about it. I think that they know what they're doing.
You're not against them making money or doing.
No, not at all. I think
you're just that, saying once they start embellishing and.
Yeah, once they start embellishing or just straight up lying, that's when there's an issue, right? No, you should be. There's nothing wrong with using your past experience to make money when you get out.
Yeah.
That's your resume.
Yeah.
Are you expected to, like, when you get out for 20 years to put on your resume your last job you had before you entered the military, right? It's like, no, this is what I did, and these are my qualifications, these are my skills, this is the experiences that I've had, and you should use all those experiences to further yourself, to get a job or to help others, and to make some money, right? Yeah. You have to make money to survive, to protect and provide your family, or to provide for your family, but you should be doing it in an honorable way.
Yeah.
For these individuals to go out there and tell half truths, it really just does a disservice to all the other dudes and men and women who have served. It puts a nasty stain on it. And it's interesting to watch. I'll tell you that. It's like, where is this going to end up going? But at the end of the day, man, I try my best, and I fail at times not to judge people. There's only one judge, and he will judge us at the end and what we've done in life.
Yeah. I tell you what, out of all the SEALs and different guys that have come in here that I've got to meet over the last year and some change, I've noticed this, and this is just from a complete outsider view, is some of the toughest ones, like, legitimately, from my perspective, they don't really talk about their own things as much as they talk about their brothers, and they talk about the team, and they talk about, they don't have all these crazy glorified stories that they're just can't wait to put on social media. Like, they're the ones that, you know, they'll be more quickly tell you the story about their friend that did some heroic act, or someone else that's like, no, I'm not bad. Like, this guy is tough. This one, you know.
Yeah.
You're the same. You always are like, no. Even Drago was like, Eddie, I know few that have had the experience that Eddie has had. And you're like, no, man, I looked up to you, you know.
That was my experience in the teams, was being around individuals like that. We build each other up. You know, we're even though they're your peers, there's guys that you're like, dude, I wish I had some of what he had, right?
Yeah.
And you're constantly working to get to that level. You're like, I want to be as good as this individual and this skill set, right?
Yeah.
But what you don't know is that person is probably thinking the same thing about you, about a certain skill. Like, dude, you're really good at this. I want to be good at this. So you're constantly improving yourself because you're surrounded by individuals that are also doing the same thing. But that's a team effort, right? That's what being part of a team is. And there should be no I did this. I'm the reason this happened. No, you're not. That is a team effort. And that's why I have a hard time. And I've been on different podcasts, or even when I was writing the book, the publisher was like, oh, you need to tell all these, what you did, these war stories. And it's like, to me, that's not my story to tell. Like, yes, I did non-combat deployments. I have plenty of stories, right? That crazy stuff, but it's not mine to be like, and then I went out and then I did this. It's like, no, everything's a we, and I would not be here without the individuals that were next to me during any of those deployments. And for me to come out and tell a story about something that happened on deployment, there's 10 other perspectives on that. So it's not my story to tell. Yeah. You know what I mean?
There's no Rambos.
No. That's what I'll say to people listening. If you see some of these guys on interviews who are like talking about, oh, then I was shooting all these people and we killed I killed so many people and did this. I'll tell you what, man, I would say 90% of the time they're full of shit. They're trying to beef themselves up, or they're making up these stories to fill whatever insecurity they have, or lack of, I guess, combat maybe they saw, and now they have to like try and fulfill that by making up these grandiose stories on podcasts. It's sad to watch, but at the same time, just know that the guys that have been there and done that, and I know there's tons of people from my line of work that are actual, like, legitimate heroes. They'll never come out and be like, this is what I did, because they weren't doing it for that reason. They're doing it for the love of country and for the love of their brothers next to them. And that I know they feel the same way I do, is for you to come out and sort of boast about what you did or tell these stories. It's disgusting to me down to a core to do that. Like it literally makes me ill. If I'm talking myself, if I catch myself, oh yeah, blah, 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 I'm the man, right? It's no, you're not. Because I think also, once you've done enough combat deployments or you've been in enough situations, you know you're not the man. Everybody's scared out there. Yeah. Everybody has their instances during those situations where they know they could have done maybe something better, or maybe they've seen their teammate make a move where they should have made a move. We all have those. And so for me, it's like, no, dude, I know I'm not. Just because I've done multiple combat deployments does not make you a badass. Okay, you're constantly trying to keep up with others that you think are badasses. And I don't know. I've met guys that have done tons of good work and that have, spent their entire career over there, and they all have the same, I think it's the same mentality, like, no, I'm not the baddest, I know, and I think that's what war does also to you. Like, being in the situations, it exposes who you really are to a core. And I'll say this, like, I have my faults, when put in those situations. Yes, you're going to go do it anyways. You're going to make the move or enter that room or put yourself in harm's way. But it's not a decision where I'm like, yes, I'm going to do it. It's like, no, I'm scared out of my fucking mind. And that's to me, you should be scared, but it also, it's like a weakness a little bit, like, and that you have. So I'm like, I can't go around boasting that I'm the baddest dude on the planet. It's like, no, dude, I know where my weaknesses lie.
For sure.
And I know even now, like, if I get into a situation, I'm going to act on it. But I'm not so freaking overly confident that I'm like, no, I'll take down whatever. I'm going to take down whatever happens, And you see these individuals that sell themselves like that. And to me, if you're selling yourself like that, like, I can take care of any situation, nobody's going to mess with me, you haven't been in the shit then.
Yeah.
You haven't been exposed.
Yeah.
So.
Well, even not in war, or correct me if I'm wrong, with everything, right? Like, even doing this podcast, I did it because it was my week. Like, I'm weak there.
Yeah, same.
And I'm going, man, I hate being on film. So, therefore, I'm going to, even though I'm scared to do it, I'm going to get used to it. I'm going to put myself in front of it. And, like we're all weak. We all have weaknesses.
Yeah.
I guess maybe if someone's going around being like, hey, look, I'm super strong here, and this is, it's almost like telling themselves that. It's almost like trying to convince yourself.
Yeah, it's their insecurity, mm-hmm. right? They're projecting. Mm-hmm. And that's what I see it as a lot of the times is, you know, and then especially if you have this, which is why I won't ever, like, I try not to, like, call names or be like, this person is a liar or this person, yeah. they're out there. Sure. But that's not my, it's not my job to call them out, right?
When you think about it, it's not really that much helpful.
Right? It's not.
You think, oh, I'm inspiring people. Well, maybe, but you know what's inspiring to me is when someone says, man, I've struggled here or I'm weak here. And now I'm not just going to settle with it. I'm going to put myself in a position to get myself stronger there. I want to grow there. But they're honest about, hey, here's where my weaknesses are. Here's where I need to grow.
Vulnerability is one of the ultimate acts of strength.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so hard for a lot of men to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because that it takes a lot of strength to do that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you see the comments when other guys are being vulnerable and then people are like, oh, you're fucking weak. Yeah. You know, this, it's like, dude, that's that person calling that person weak, you know, weak for being vulnerable, that's him projecting.
Yeah.
Because it's like, dude, how much crap do you have hidden that you need to expose, that you need to work through?
Hiding behind a keyboard.
Yeah. And I believe me, I was like that. I was number one guy that when I was in, if you showed weakness in any way, like pussy.
Yeah.
You're a pussy. And I regret being like that to a certain extent. I do think that there's a time and place to be vulnerable. Then I also think there's a time and place like, hey, dude, suck it up. Like, we're going. Like, no one, we don't need to hear about your feelings or emotions right now.
You don't have, like, a feelings group before you, like, do a raid on a building. How does everyone feel right now?
and that's where, like, yeah, if you during an operation or right before an operation, you're like, oh, I'm, you know, it's like, dude, we ain't got time for this, man. Like, we're focusing on what's going on. But, you know, during the down times, yes, there, you should be able to talk to each other about how you're feeling, except, you know, I know when I was, the way I was raised in the military, it was like, you don't talk about your feelings. If you are vulnerable in any way, you're being a bitch and you need to get out. Right. Which is not the right way to handle things. And that's just the environment that I was raised in the military, and that's how I sort of grew up in it. By the time I was 17, 18 years in, I literally was like, dude, I don't want my give a shit button was worn out.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't care what your problems are. Yeah. Like, we all have problems. Get your shit on. We're going.
Well, like, I love how you say there's time and place.
Yeah.
Because that's true. You can't blanket statement being like, hey, everyone needs to just show vulnerable. All men need to just be vulnerable all the time. No.
No, you also have to be stoic.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of stoicism involved in doing that job. And there's a time and place to be stoic as well.
Yeah. But if you're a social media influencer, or if you've come out and you've got guys looking up to you, right, after post-military especially, man, sharing where you had weaknesses or when you were scared and you faced it anyway, right, or where you still are really weak and asking for help. Or,
mm-hmm.
I think, man, the epidemic with just getting plugged, and with drug addicts, community.
Yeah.
community is crucial.
Yep. Find people
that really know you.
That know you, that you can trust.
Yeah.
And that's a huge thing is trust, right? But yeah, find, you should have a group at least, you know, and it doesn't have to be like exactly where you live. It can be on a phone tree, right? Like of guys that you trust, that you served with, or maybe you didn't serve with. Maybe it's somebody that you are just really good friends with that you can confide in. But you should be able to like communicate with those individuals and be like, "Hey, man, I'm not feeling good today, dude." Remember having Johnny Wilson on?
Yeah.
I mean, he'll call me or text me out of the blue. Won't speak to him for a month, and he's like, "Hey, man, how are you doing?" Mm-hmm. Like, and he's legitimate about it. He's like, "I want to know how you are doing right now."
It's not him, Eddie. It's an AI script.
Yeah. But that's what I mean, and then that forces me, because I'll be like, "I'm good." And then he'll be like, cut the shit. Really? And so you're like, all right, man, well, maybe I am dealing with this right now. Yeah. And it's just even admitting, yes, I'm dealing with this right now. He might not have the answer for it, sure. But at least me admitting it to him takes some weight off of me.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think as men, and women do it too, but I can only speak because I'm a man and because of what I've gone through, men feel this necessity to hold on to every, like, I cannot release anything. I have to carry this weight for my family, for me, you know. And it's like, dude, you can't keep that up. It will crush, that weight will crush you eventually. Some of us are stronger than others, or you know, everybody's cup gets filled at a certain a different time. But if you are not emptying some of that baggage or some of that cup off every now and then, it will end up crushing you,
yeah,
or overflowing, you know.
And that, and in a crazy sense, that's God loving you, because yoke is easy, burden is light. You know, like that true full weight is meant for the Lord, right? And you need to be yoked up to Him. Now, what that looks like isn't in solitude. Like,
no.
You don't have you can't have just, hey, I have my own little personal relationship with God and no one else knows what's going on, or no, God meant for us to be in community.
Yeah.
And so having those friends, do you think it's helpful having friends like other SEALs, but also other friends that have no military, like have a complete different background as well?
Oh, for sure, man. I think that's super helpful. And I'll say it does a lot more sometimes. For me, being, you know, speaking to somebody that's not from the community, because I think, you know, I'm fine. Like, I'll speak with my brothers from the community about certain things, and there's still that level of like, oh, you're going through that, like, you know, a little bit, you know, it's like, oh, that's kind of weak, you know.
Yeah.
Which I kind of, I still kind of like that a little bit, because it keeps you, you know, you're like, all right, you know,
yeah.
I'm not going to be a bitch, yeah. You know, but there are, having somebody that's not from the community and that can sort of help empathize a little bit with you. They might not understand exactly what you're going through, but they can empathize, and they can also share some of their similarities, you know, even though it's from a different background, a lot of the similarities are the same.
Yeah.
Right. So you can discuss like what it's like to be depressed, or what it's like to have anxiety, and or just any other symptoms that you might be having. You know, veterans aren't the only ones that go through those symptoms. There's people, sure. Everybody has them, right?
Sure. They may have a different viewpoint to being on the outside, that in a tight-knit community like that can get almost myopic, where these are your only options or whatever, where someone outside of it sees it from a whole different perspective, that sometimes that's the answer for that time.
Yeah.
Like a helpful pathway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And that's why I also say therapy is good. And it doesn't have to be like, and I was the same way when therapy was brought up. And even the guy that I talk to now, Dr. Chris Free, I talked to him once a week when I got out, and I was not the easiest patient or whatever, however you want to call it. I was like, I don't trust this dude. Why the fuck would I want to talk to somebody? He doesn't know what I'm, he doesn't know what I've been through, and he doesn't, hasn't seen this and this. And yeah, but he's also, that's his job, is to talk to individuals that have been through trauma. Like he knows more about trauma than you do. He might not have the same experiences, or he himself has not gone through it, but he understands what trauma is and how to go through it. Right. Yeah. And
well, I think what's helpful sometimes with therapists, like good therapists, there's a lot of therapists that there's different kinds, right? And sometimes, sometimes with therapy, it's not about the therapist, right? Like a really good therapist isn't, they may not necessarily have the answers. They're not thinking of answers necessarily. They're letting this person go through a journey, and they're just another person on the other side. A lot of times it's just like mirroring back stuff.
Yeah. And it's just allowing that person to vent, to open up, to like unload that weight that they've been carrying on. Like just by speaking the words and getting them out, that lessens the weight.
Yeah.
Right. And you do multiple talks like that, that weight becomes less and less. And then you start being able to think clearer. And then you're like, oh, this is how I can feel. Right. And you start seeing the benefits of it. And yeah, you do need to have a good therapist. Like if you don't trust the therapist, or maybe this person, you have a bad feeling, there's nothing wrong with finding another one.
Yeah.
Right. But I do think that talking to someone is, a very beneficial way to go to start moving you in the right direction.
Yeah.
To bettering yourself.
And through community. I mean, some of the best like therapy, like therapeutic stuff that has happened to me and that I've seen run in transitional living houses was during community, was peer to peer, was that happened in community.
Yeah. I mean, you have a butt ton more experience than I do when it comes to dealing with trauma or other people's trauma and addictions, and you having to talk to those individuals. And I mean, I can't imagine, because it has to be hard as well to take all that on, you know, because when somebody's dumping into you like, hey, this is what I'm going through and these are my problems, and I know there's a little bit that has to affect you a little bit too, right? Because you're taking that on
sometimes,
and trying to talk
through you get that. Better at it, right? Like you get better at not being codependent and not taking stuff on. But you know what? It's some of the healthiest when you're doing it all the time. Like there was a time there that I was doing, I mean, we'd have like 10 sessions, like private a day, and then running groups and then training other counselors. You know, these guys that were coming out of DTS program, and then after a group, they're like, "Why? How come you went there with that guy instead of here?" And you're just like, "Because I'm a selfish motherfucker, and that's what my head tells me that I would do if I'm in his shoes."
Yeah. You know,
like that's, I wasn't using a theory framework to take him. Like,
yeah, like
I'm thinking in my head as the addict, but there's, you also have like it from the outside, it'd look really bad because they're like, whoa, you're just kind of like making light of stuff. But with other therapists or other people, we would joke and have fun and just laugh about stuff that a lot of other people would not laugh about.
Yeah, the like, dark humor.
Dark humor is somewhat helpful.
I think dark humor is extremely helpful.
And it just like lessens a lot of stuff, especially when you're dealing, I mean, dude, we've had guys dying, and then save some of them, you don't save some of them, you know, a dude ODs, goes back, and then you spend all this time and trying to help him, and then the family enables him, and you know, 3 weeks later he dies of an overdose, and you're at the funeral, and like you got to, if you're just taking on that stuff constantly,
you gotta have some humor, like ways to make light of it, mm-hmm. or not light. It's the same premise, you know, people in the military, we all have dark humor because not all of us, but I think a majority of us do, because of the things that you see and the things that you have to do, are a lot of those experiences, the regular human is not supposed to go through that stuff.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to see those things. So having dark humor is a way to sort of combat it and relieve the stress a little bit. And I think it's funny when you get, you know, some team guys together or whatever, you know, and you have maybe some civilians around, and the way that we're talking about certain things and joking, they're like, dude, you guys are sick in the head. It's like, no, this is the way that we are dealing with our trauma, or like dealing with the stuff that we've seen.
Yeah. You're like, you are correct, but
yeah.
Dude, when we were at the ranch afterwards, we had like me and Robert afterwards talked and said, what'd you think of the weekend? And me and Robert were like, oh, that was great. That's like old times. I said, hey, what'd you think? And he goes, one word to describe it, traumatizing.
Oh, yeah, that poor guy.
I know.
He got an earful that weekend for sure.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Thanks for sharing all that. I think that'd be really helpful for, hopefully for a lot of people. I think some of the big takeaways from what you shared was, of course, community and getting involved, but especially for the wives coming out and for the vets coming out, shouldn't say wives, spouses, and the vet that is coming out of years of deployments to have patience and grace.
Yes. That is the biggest, I mean, and I'm not an expert. I'm not a marriage expert. I don't know. I'm not a counselor, but I've been through it. Me and my wife have been through it, me and Andrea. And I think, yeah, that is the one thing that has got us through is obviously our love for each other, but the amount of patience and grace, especially the amount of patience and grace Andrea has given me. And that if you love each other, it's worth fighting for, and you just have to put in the work. And just know putting in that work is hard. It's going to be a struggle. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel for your marriage, for yourself. You will get there, and that's where the patience comes in. You're not just going to get there within a couple weeks or maybe even a couple years. It takes time. But if you are constantly keeping that at the forefront, that you are working on it and you are trying to better yourself, not only for yourself, but also for your partner and for your wife and for your kids, you will get there.
Yeah.
Right. Just don't give up. And then I will say you are worth it. You are worth, living for. You being on this earth makes the earth a better place, no matter what you think. I'm so sick of seeing these guys take their own lives. And I'm not a counselor in that form either. I just know that it is definitely one of the most selfish acts that you can do, because you're transferring your pain now onto your family. So please, especially if there are veterans out there listening right now that are struggling, dude, reach out to somebody, talk to them, or just be vulnerable, man. Be vulnerable to your wife. Tell her that, ask her for help. Tell her that you need her help. I guarantee you that's going to go a long ways.
Yeah. It's a good word.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome, brother.
Out.
Out.
That's great.
Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you're the man, dude.
It's always the ones. Yeah, that was great. Oh, are we having a tornado or what? I was like, we got to wrap this up. Me and Harper about to chase this tornado.
Dude. Is this supposed to storm all day?
This afternoon. 2 hours will be over. Did we get some alerts?
See, I gotta get an alert.
Oh, yeah, he's gotta go storm chasing. Oh, what he gotta do?
Hey, appreciate you, brother. Thank you, man.
Anytime. Hey, dude.
I'll be here in the morning for Bible study.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, I might bring a couple of boys.
Yeah.
Just let them sit in the corner.
Dude, they can join. They can do whatever.
No, I just want them to see me doing something good.
That's awesome.
Alright, I'll see y'all.
Appreciate you, dude.
Randy called me the other day. I guess he got Fox Nation
has like greenlit him to come up with like 3 pilot episodes for shows. Dogs Nation,
which I'm like,
pilot episode?
Yeah, like to create a show. So Brandon.